That was the year.
Recreating notable events of passing time, reviving memories of men and women who have contributed to the history of a modern world.
That was the year.
Washington, D.C., January 15.
With but one dissenting vote, the United States Senate ratifies a multilateral treaty outlawing the red specter of war.
And that was the year.
February 11. On this day, a voluntary exile from temporal power again becomes an independent sovereign ruler. The ruler of a state within a state. The sovereign of perhaps the tiniest independent territory in history. With impressive and solemn mien, his representatives meet the man with whom they are to sign a treaty. Outside of the factions of both parties, eyeing each other like angry bulldogs, tense in their expectation of trouble. Slowly, a powerfully built, jutting-jawed man approaches a dignified, red-robed figure.
Cardinal Pacelli.
Si. Premier Mussolini, this is Cardinal Gaspari, and these, Monsignors Borgongini Duca and Pizzardo.
Excellency.
You have the treaty?
Si.
Meanwhile, outside the Lateran Palace of the Vatican City, the tenseness mounted. Some priests began singing the Te Deum. In answer, the Mussolini faction shouted,
"It is about time that the Mussolini recognized the Holy Father."
You had better not let me hear you say that again.
I will say it again. It is about time.
Santa
Maria.
The treaty. The sign. The treaty has been signed.
And so, my friends, they are both great men.
The two greatest in the world.
Of vast importance was the signing of the treaty between the Vatican and Premier Mussolini, far more vast than was intimated by the brief statement issued by the Observatore Romano, which was almost unconcerned in tone.
At noon today, signature was effected of a treaty between the Holy See and Italy, whereby the Roman question was settled, as well as a concordat regulating the conditions of religion and of the church in Italy. Together with the treaty, a financial convention also was signed.
And after centuries of voluntary retirement within the walls of the Vatican, the Pope once more assumed the offices and duties of a temporal as well as spiritual ruler.
1929, that was the year.
St. Louis, July 30. Far above the earth, a plane swoops round and round in seemingly never-ending circles. On the ground below, anxious watchers keep their eyes glued to the tiny speck. Then, suddenly...
Hey, look! They're coming down! They're gonna land!
Two women watch anxiously also. Their hands clasped together. For 420 hours, 20 minutes, and 30 seconds they have watched thus. They are the wives of the men in the plane. At 38 minutes, 30 seconds past 7, the St. Louis Robin glides to earth in a perfect landing amid the roaring cheers of the crowd. The two wives streak from their places toward the grounded plane. Exceeding by 173 hours, 37 minutes, and 58 seconds, the previous world record for endurance flight, Dale Red Jackson and Forrest O'Brien collected $15,672.50 each. Their mileage was 25,000. Gas consumption, 3,590 gallons.
1929, that was the year.
Continuing a spectacular conquest of the air, man launched a new giant of the skies. In Friedrichshafen, Germany, Thursday, August 1, slowly a huge cigar-shaped gray bulk noses from the hangar. Majestically, it moves out. At 3:28 German time, Pompadour Dr. Eckner gives the command for the start of the Graf Zeppelin to America. Ninety-three hours later, the Graf Zeppelin noses away across the hangar at Lakehurst, New Jersey. A landing crew scurries to Mora. Jubilant Dr. Eckner speaks to the waiting reporters.
I did not count in the total time the excursion over New York City.
And what was your total time in the air, Dr. Eckner?
95 hours and 23 minutes. We lost a little time in Friedrichshafen looking for a stowaway. We did not find him.
Did you find him after you'd left?
Oh, yeah. He was a young German baker who thought he could make better bread here in America.
Thus continued progress in the air. And in Coddington, England, the R-101 Leviathan of the Sky was successfully launched October 12.
Friday, November 29.
In a bitterly cold tent pitched on ice and snow, a wireless whined out a thrilling message.
My calculations indicate that we have reached the vicinity of the South Pole, flying high for survey. The aeroplane is in good shape, crew all well. We'll soon turn north. We can see an almost limitless polar plateau. Our departure from the pole was at 1:25 p.m. Richard E. Byrd. They've done it, boys! They've flown over the South Pole!
Conqueror of two poles by air, Commander Richard E. Byrd thus wrote another exciting and breathtaking chapter to man's further domination of the elements.
1929, that was the year.
This year, France lost two of her heroes. On March 20, Field Marshal Foch, commander-in-chief of the Allied forces during the World War. 8 months later, almost to the day, on November 24, died the Tiger of France, colorful, fiery Georges Clemenceau. And in the United States, death took three of the stage's beloved figures, Gene Eagles, Dustin Farnham, and Raymond Hitchcock. While in Monte Carlo, Lily Langtry, famed as the Jersey Lily, died, far from her homeland.
1929. That was the year?
Thursday, October 29.
Look! Look at Tom!
Tell the boys I can't pay them what I owe them.
What is it? What? You?
John G. Schwitzgebel, insurance man, thus committed suicide by firing two shots into his chest. His friend said,
I believe John was caught in the market.
Those few words meant many more deaths. The sentence was burned into the consciousness of the American people. Frantic scenes on the New York Stock Exchange forced a realization that something was radically wrong. Stocks crashed. It was conservatively estimated that the actual loss in market value on the exchange ran to about $4 billion. And in Washington, October 25...
The fundamental business of the country, that is production and distribution of commodities, is on a sound and prosperous basis. The best evidence is that although production and consumption are at high levels, the average prices of commodities as a whole have not increased, and there have been no appreciable increases in the stocks of manufactured goods. Moreover, there has been a tendency...
Those were President Hoover's words. And on the same day, October 25, in Poughkeepsie, New York...
Much of the activity of the stock market is legitimate and proper. But in some cases, improper schemes and questionable methods have been used in stock promotion, and many investors have lost sight of the real purpose of the exchange in a fever of old-fashioned speculation. People say we ought to live up to the law. Then we say, oh, well, why live up to that particular law? We allow ourselves the privilege of breaking one law because it is a fashion to break others.
Those were the words of Governor Franklin Delano Roosevelt of New York. Still the debacle swept on, engulfing luckless investors in a rising tide of panic. On October 30...
Stock prices virtually collapsed yesterday, swept downward with gigantic losses in the most disastrous trading day in the stock market's history. Billions of dollars in open market values were wiped out as prices crumbled under the pressure of liquidation of securities which had to be sold at any price.
New York, October 31.
Introducing a note of optimism into the dark cacophony of despair, Nonagenarian John D. Rockefeller spoke.
Believing that fundamental conditions of the country are sound and that there is nothing in the business situation to warrant the destruction of values that has taken place on the exchange during the past week, my son and I have for some days been purchasing sound common stocks. We are continuing and will continue.
But the panic rolled on. Suicides mounted under the pressure of despair. And on December 3, President Herbert Clark Hoover delivered his first annual message to Congress.
We have canvassed the federal government and instituted measures of prudent expansion and such work that should be helpful, and upon which the different departments will make some early recommendations to Congress. I am convinced that through these measures, we have reestablished confidence. Wages should remain stable. A very large degree of industrial unemployment and suffering, which would otherwise have occurred, has been prevented.
And in the midst of it all, Americans were dancing to this sprightly ditty of a synthetic Orion.
Hot tin and dynamite. There's nothing but that at night. Back and back a second where the fellas shoot a backy and the women with your wacky woo. No way they can entertain. Would hurry a hurricane. Back and back a second where the fellas shoot a backy and the women with your wacky woo.
Fujiyama, you get a mama, and all your troubles increase. Summer daughter, she orders order.
Milkshakes, milkshakes, 10 cents a piece. Hey, kissy and huggy nice. By jingle, it's worth the price. Back and back a second where the fellas chew the baggy and the women wicky wacky boo. Yo ho and a barrel of rum.
Fellows, if you're on, I will spin a yarn
that was told to me by Abel Seaman Jones.
Once he had the blues, so he took a cruise
far away from nightclubs and from saxophones. He said, yo ho, I made a certain fort. And when you talk of Bumfrey, you deem and sport. Whoa, ho, ho. They give you a carriage free, but the horse is a Japanese. Back in Nagasaki, where the fellas chew the baggy and the women wicky wacky woo. They sit you around the floor. No wonder your pants get sore. Back in Nagasaki, where the fellas chew the baggy and the women wicky wacky woo. Oh, Fujiyama, when you get a mama, your troubles will surely increase. In some pagoda, she orders soda. Milkshakes, milkshakes, 10 cents a piece. And no tax.
No tax.
Can't believe it's true.
And no cracks.
No cracks.
About a missing cue.
Back in Nagasaki, where the fellas chew the baggy and the women wicky wacky woo.
Wicky way, wicky wee, wicky why, wicky wacky
woo.
Thank you.